Warning. This story depicts scenes and scenarios that may be disturbing to some viewers. Viewer discretion is advised. I made it to the dining hall, right at 8:15 on the dot. I scanned the area to search for Alex, and I noticed that there were men in white walking up and down each aisle. The dining hall itself had three large sections. Caterpillars, 0 to 30 days, were in one area closest to the door. Then the cocoons, 30 to 75 days, were in the middle. And finally, the butterflies, 75 to 90 days, were in the back corner. In total, there were about 60 people, 20 caterpillars, 30 cocoons, and 10 butterflies. I soon discovered Alex sitting at a table with just Matt and Travis. I cautiously walked over and sat down. Alex looked on the verge of tears. Matt was staring off straight at the wall and still looked pretty zonked out, and Travis had his eyes fixed on the ground with his hands clenched into fists. Our silence was tense and awkward until Travis spoke up.
Guys, we gotta get the hell out of here.
Alex broke down crying.
We're trapped. There's no way out.
There was a moment of stillness, and I shifted my eyes upwards. I noticed that one of the men in white had stopped several feet from our table. I whispered to them urgently. Look, guys, we can't talk about this here. They're listening. But I think there might be a place we can. We'll meet during free time. The rest of lunch was quiet, and the hall was filled with anxious energy. A few words were uttered around the room, but it was mostly silent. Some of the other peers also got up to get their meals, but none of us were hungry, so we just sat there, peeled to our chairs, waiting to see what would happen next. 5 minutes before 9 a.m., a voice boomed over the room.
Split up and head to groups.
We were gathered by the men in white, and I followed the caterpillar group into a room with a circle of chairs and a large television. A tall, skinny man with lanky arms and glasses walked to the center of the area. We all took a seat, and for a moment, everything was still. Good day, friends. Today we will be viewing a film on how our choices may lead us to dark places, he said. Something about his voice sounded all off. It almost sounded like a pre-recorded message playing out of a tape recorder, kind of staticky and robotic. I also noticed his lips were very slightly out of sync with the words that were spoken. Everything went dark, and the TV illuminated the room. On the screen flashed pictures of people overdosed, dead with needles in their arms. There were images and videos of people committing suicide by cutting and hanging themselves. Mutilated corpses and people smiling with their skin flayed off. There was even a 5-minute section of someone horribly abusing what seems to be their spouse and her begging him to stop. I was mortified, and I looked away from the screen, only to meet eyes with a man in white with a clipboard. He smiled at me, then wrote something down. I quickly discovered that they were keeping notes on who was and wasn't watching. Every time someone even closed their eyes for too long, this guy on the clipboard somehow knew. I had to endure the rest of the film. The lights eventually came on, and before I could even gather myself, that same booming voice filled the room.
Next group.
We were again quickly ushered into another room. This room had a long table with paint, paintbrushes, and paper in front of each chair. It was led by a woman that could only be described as what a witch would look like. She had a large, pointy nose and a constant scowl. Her voice had the same scratchy tape recorder-like effect to it, and half of her face seems to droop down. She told us to paint what we believed our death will feel like. At this point, my heart was beating out of my chest. I was pouring down sweat, and I was so dizzy, I felt like I could faint. I grabbed the red paintbrush and began making jagged red lines with black dots throughout. The witch lady made long laps around the table every so often, whispering in someone's ear or grabbing their paper and tearing it to shreds, screaming at them to start over. I glanced at Alex, and he was shaking uncontrollably, eyes like a wild animal, as he tried to steady his hand enough to paint anything on his paper. Eventually, the lady made it to me and whispered,
"No one will notice when you die."
And she spat on my paper. The group ended, and we were hustled back into the dining hall for lunch. I sat at a random table and stared straight at the ground, not even glancing at my peers the entire time. I knew I had to make it out of here somehow. After lunch, there was a period of free time. I found Alex, Matt, and Travis, and told them to follow me immediately, and we headed down to the sauna. The sauna was located in the far corner of the lower right wing of the building. When we got there, I scanned the area for any men in white, but I didn't see a single person. I opened the door and ordered them inside.
"Guys, I don't know what the hell is going on in this place, but you have to look at this note I found. I think it's really important, and I think we need to follow its rules to stay safe," I stammered.
Travis spoke up.
"I don't care about your note. I'm running away from here the second I have a chance."
"No," I yelled.
"You can't do that. Just, please, read it."
There was a moment of silence. I reached into my pocket and handed the note over. Alex grabbed it, and they huddled around him. For a full 10 minutes, they stared at the note, reading it over and over. Alex slowly handed it back to me. I spoke up.
"Look, I don't know what this place is, or who these people are, but we're going to get out of here. We just have to follow these rules, go to all of their sick groups, and we will come up with a plan."
They all seemed unsure of what to do, but we eventually agreed to keep our heads down until we could figure something out. We left the sauna and rushed back to the main area to make it to the next group on time. This group was led by a man with a scraggly beard and large bags under his eyes. His voice almost sounded human. He spoke to us about how he used to be addicted to meth, and how he would get high and stalk women just to scare them and their families. Then he stated how, after he came to Harmony Hills, his life changed, and he is his true self now. Next was a group led by a man in a dark black cloak that also had the tape recorder voice. He dimmed the lights and told us about ancient gods in the cosmos that brought unfathomable suffering to living beings. He drew symbols on our foreheads with a black powder and had us recite chants in some strange language. There was always at least 5 to 6 large men in white with us in these groups, waiting on the outskirts of the room. They would either be taking notes or grinning at us, ready to strike anyone down that disobeyed. Finally, there were a couple hours of free time, and Alex and Matt decided it would be a good idea to scope out the exterior of the building to get an idea of how we could escape. We made sure to stay on the trail that looped around the grounds as the rules for survival suggested. The trail was actually very long and dipped into the woods quite a bit. As we walked, one of our other peers that we were in detox with previously booked it off of the trail into the forest. After about a minute, we heard one quick scream, a loud, tearing sound, and then silence. I made a vow right then to follow these rules no matter what. We went to dinner and actually ate the food this time. We were all going to do our best not to do or say anything incriminating. After dinner, we spent the rest of our free time scouring the building for any clues on how we could escape. On one of the upper floors on the right wing, there was a long hallway of all locked doors. I figured there had to be something inside one of those that could help us. There were always men in white walking the halls and checking on everyone, and we had no idea if there were hidden cameras throughout the building. We determined the only safe place to speak freely were either the sauna or the trail. The final group of the day was the reflections group. The caterpillars were all joined in one room, and we went around in a circle and were told to reflect on how we could improve our recovery. This group was only led by peers, but obviously also had several men in whites looking over us. I said some generic answer, like, I need to focus on bettering myself and completing my goals, or something like that. Every single person in that room also had the same kind of generic answer that I did. We all looked like trapped and abused animals, spouting off whatever would make the men in white happy. There was a bit more free time before bed, and we were all exhausted. We went back to the sauna. It seemed Matt had finally come to his senses because he came up with the idea that I should write copies of the rules so we all could have one. I scrawled down at least 7 more of those notes and handed them to Alex, Travis, and Matt, and kept a couple extras for myself. We didn't really have any sort of plan yet. The only real idea was from Travis. He said if we could get enough people to join them, then we could start a riot and kill the men in white and the other staff, and make it out of here somehow. Not the best plan, considering we had no clue how many staff there were, and we had no idea what was out in those forests. I went up to my room and lied down. I thought about how I didn't see any cars in the parking lot, and wondered where all the staff were sleeping. There seemed to be so many all over the place all the time. It had to be somewhere. As I was drifting off, I thought about my parents and my ex-girlfriend until I eventually fell asleep. I had a dream that I was chasing a snake through a field. I was terrified of what was around me, but I kept my eyes peeled on the snake, following its every movement. Suddenly, I jolted awake out of bed to the sounds of furious scratching at my door. My eyes were wide open, and I could audibly hear my heart thumping in my chest. After only about another second, it stopped. I turned on my light and waited.
Anthony, honey, are you in here? I've come to take you home. Come out here, quick.
It was my mom. How did she find me? I rushed to the door and began to turn the knob. Then right as it began to open, I froze. The rules. If someone comes to your door at night, do not let them in, no matter what they say. I stayed in that position for a full minute until I slowly shut the door and walked backwards back to my bed. I stood there for a moment, and then I heard a faint sound of what sounded like a child cackling, and then an animal skittering off. I laid awake in my bed the rest of the night, but there were no more sounds. It went on like this for a few days. Myself, Alex, Matt, and Travis surveyed the grounds and tried to come up with a plan. The groups were always horrible and disturbing. We kept watching sick, morbid films, doing strange, dark art projects while getting screamed at, being told more about these ancient cosmic entities and surrendering our will to them, amongst other terrible things. We even had a group where they would pick one of our peers out seemingly at random and make the rest of us yell at them and berate them. If we didn't do what they told us to do, then we would be forced into submission holds and be given injections from the nurses Occasionally, they would grab one of us and forcibly drag us to a place everyone called the box. If that person came back from the box, he was never the same again. I wasn't exactly sure what the box was, but I prayed I would never have to find out. Travis tried to form a group of us to fight back, but everyone seemed so resigned. They would just ignore him or tell him that he had to complete the program. I was having constant nightmares at that point, and I felt my sanity slipping from me. We all started to lose weight. It seems the food they fed us didn't do much to sustain anyone. On day 6, something broke in Matt. We were in an art therapy group where we had to create sculptures out of various animal parts. The witch lady was making her usual menacing laps about the table. But when she got to Matt, she ended up staying extra long, whispering to him. What she actually said, I will never know. But his face went completely pale. We made it to lunch, and Matt wouldn't speak a word. Though we couldn't say much around the men in white anyway, we typically at least would talk about something innocuous. Travis tried to console him.
Dude, are you all right? We can make it through this by just trying to be strong.
Matt glanced at him, but didn't utter a word. Instead, he slowly stood up, and then suddenly lunged at one of the men in white with a pencil that he pulled out from his waistband. He stuck the pencil right into the side of the man's neck, and a small fountain of blood erupted. Travis stood up to defend himself, but just moments later, the dining hall was littered with the men in white. They were like locusts. The one who got stabbed didn't even scream. He just turned his body, faced Matt, and formed a huge, malicious smile. 5 men were on Matt in a matter of seconds, and one grabbed Travis, forcing him back into his seat. The men were all gleefully giggling as they carried Matt's thrashing body out of the dining hall. The man with the pencil in his neck just sauntered into another room without even removing it. The whole room fixed its eyes on us. Alex broke out in tears, and Travis sat there with his hands on his face and elbows on the table for the rest of lunch. Afterward, we headed out of the dining hall into a common area. The man with long, lanky arms and glasses, who ran the first groups of the day, stopped us before we could sit down.
The owner would like to speak with all of you. Head up to the top floor, and you will be escorted to his office.
He smiled. His eyes looked predatory and excited. We didn't say a word. I think we were all still in shock. When we arrived at the top floor, a man in white brought us to the hallway with locked rooms and had us sit on some chairs that were outside one of the doors. I subtly managed to grab Alex and Travis's attention and whispered, "Don't look him in the eyes." After only a minute or so, the door opened, and we were beckoned in by a deep, groaning voice.
"Come in, please. Come in."
We all had our eyes glued to the floor as we tentatively walked into the room, but I managed to get a peek at our surroundings. The office actually looked pretty normal. It had a large, brown, worn couch and black table with papers and a laptop on it. It sort of looked like a high school principal's office. There was also a wide file cabinet pressed into the corner of the room, with a stand carrying several vials of unknown liquid on top. We all sat on the couch, keeping our heads fixed down at our laps.
"It has come to my attention that an acquaintance of yours has caused somewhat of a disruption in our community."
His voice was raspy and guttural. It sounded almost strained, and I could feel his eyes burning into me. Alex was the first one to respond.
Sir, we don't know what got into him,
but we sincerely apologize for his behavior. Please, we don't want to cause any further disruption.
He let out a thunderous laugh that shook the room.
I can taste the fear in you, child. But you mustn't fret. Your friend has been sent to a psychiatric care facility, where he will be treated respectfully. I am not here to hurt you. I am here to help you fulfill your potential. But I must be certain there will not be another incident.
I knew this was nonsense, and rage filled my body.
You're going to kill him,
I screamed out. I didn't even realize the words had escaped my mouth until it was too late. He let out another roaring laugh.
Look at me,
the owner shouted. I felt my head shoot up before I had a chance to resist. He was an older man, skin stretched right across his face. He had white hair with a long ponytail resting across his body. His arms were frail and skinny, and at first he didn't look nearly as imposing as I thought he would. That was until I met his eyes. They were glowing black and had an unnatural shine to them. As I stared, I heard the desperate screams and cries of people being tortured. I heard my parents crying. And all of a sudden, I was in a different room entirely. It was a completely empty gray cement room with a single mirror on the wall. I sat there for a couple seconds, too terrified to move. I searched the area and eventually, cautiously, made my way to the mirror. When I looked at the reflection, it seemed I was somehow a child again. I had my old pajamas on that I had when I was a kid, and I looked as though I hadn't eaten or slept in days. I was confused and terrified. I didn't know what to do. I started screaming and frantically feeling the walls for any sort of way out of this prison. Eventually, I just fell on the ground, sobbing. I cried for what felt like hours until the tears ran dry. I started rapidly breathing and noticed myself starting to slip into a panic attack when I felt a sharp pain on my foot. I turned my head, and somehow I was back in the owner's office, staring at Travis. I was shaking, completely bewildered as to what had just happened. The owner let out yet another of his deafening laughs. I sense that there will be no more issues. You all may leave now. Travis and Alex stood up, and Travis grabbed my arm and pulled me to the door. We made our way down the hallway and to the stairs.
What happened?
I managed to stammer out.
You looked at his face, dude. I had to do something,
Travis said.
But what did you do? I don't know what's going on. Is this real?
He noticed my confusion, and we all stopped.
No, man.
You started looking at him and wouldn't look away. So after like 6 or 7 seconds, I stomped on your foot, he said. I didn't know what else to say. So we just quietly made our way back down to the dining hall. When we arrived, there were only minutes left until the next group. That night, as I lay in bed, my mother's voice came to my door again. She berated me, telling me I was a failure that was going to die a junkie, and then laughed at me until morning. Mats didn't come back the next day, or the day after that. The situation was becoming dire, but we were all too paralyzed with fear to do anything about it. The groups were starting to take a bigger toll on my mental health as well, and I was having night terrors constantly. I would wake up screaming only to realize where I was, and an overwhelming sense of dread would come over me. Every now and then, people would get taken away from breaking the rules. They were either sent to the box or were never seen again. Some people even took their chances and ran into the forest, but I'm certain that most, if not all of them, died. During my free time, I started keeping a journal of the atrocities I was enduring and would write letters to my family, hoping that one day they would see them. I had no idea how much time had passed at this point, and I slowly began resigning myself to whatever fate was designed for the ones who finished this horrifying program. As my hope started dying, my relationship with Alex and Travis started dwindling as well. None of us really spoke much to each other, or anyone else for that matter. It took the death of another one of my peers to reignite the fire for survival in me once again. His name was Danny, and he was a young kid. I couldn't have been over 18. He had long brown hair swept to the side of his face, and he had an innocence about him that remained even after it had been lost in the rest of us. We were in one of our spirituality groups, and the leader of the group, the tall, menacing, robed man, loomed over us with his malevolent aura. On that particular day, we had just been lectured about a certain ancient god whose name I cannot begin to pronounce, and how he would reveal himself with the demand of a sacrifice. He left the room, and we all stared at each other with fearful anticipation. After 5 minutes or so, he came back with a brown box that was closed shut, and he had us begin to recite a selection of chants in a strange language. He then made a circle in black powder and urged us to continue chanting while he slowly reached his hands into the box. Right as he pulled it out, I heard a scream.
No, you can't do this.
It was Danny. The robed man had pulled out a small puppy who couldn't have been over a year old out from the box. Danny started to charge the man, but the men in white were on him quickly.
You weak child. Now you will be the main attraction to our special guest.
Danny was sobbing. Everyone in the room froze.
Do not stop the ritual, the robed man yelled. Then bring the boy to me.
We all continued the chant hesitantly. The men in white grabbed Danny and forced him to his knees in front of the black circle. The man then pulled out a ceremonial knife from out of his robe. Danny was bawling and struggling, but was no match for the men holding him down. The rest of us just continued our chant, terrified of what was about to come.
Let this innocent soul be your gateway to our universe, the robed man said.
He then slit the throats of the puppy. There was a quick yelp, and blood sprayed over Danny's face. Before anyone else could react, there were sparks jumping out of the black circle, and dark shades of blue and purple dancing above it. A crack formed seemingly right out of thin air, and a giant tentacle shot into the room. It slithered and swatted, knocking pictures off the wall and breaking chairs. A large red eye appeared in the center of us, staring at everyone with intense hatred. All of a sudden, the tentacle latched onto Danny's face and dragged him through the crack. Everyone was still. The monster was gone, and the cracks disappeared along with Danny. The robed man let out a smile, and the men in white hastily escorted us out of the room. It all happened so fast. I felt my anger growing inside me. I ran outside and onto the trail. I kept going and going,
trying to burn off that intense fury. I stumbled onto the ground and broke down, sobbing. I wanted to be back home. I wanted to see my mom. I wanted a life again. I had to think of something. There had to be some way out of this place. I reached into my pocket and grabbed the list of rules. I read over them slowly to see if there were any clues. The only thing that stood out was the man in the meditation room. Maybe he could help me. Whoever wrote this note thought he was friendly. I made a plan to sneak out of my room right at 3 a.m. to go talk to him alone. The rest of that day went by slowly. I basically just zoned out during the groups and didn't speak with anyone. Eventually, I made it to lights out and went up to my bedroom. I knew I had to do something to keep myself preoccupied so I wouldn't doze off. So I started pacing and doing sit-ups and push-ups. 12 a.m. came along and I heard the familiar scratching at my door. Whatever was on the other side of the door was using my childhood best friend's voice to try and entice me to exit the room. But I wasn't falling for it.
Tommy, it's me, dude. It's Zach. Come on, I'm coming to get you the hell out of here.
Yeah, right, I thought. I don't know what the creature had in mind for me if I did open up, but there was no way I was going to find out. Finally, it was 2:30 a.m., and I began mentally preparing myself to sneak down to the meditation room. I knew I couldn't leave until right at 3 a.m., because the rules stated to never exit your room from 2:30 to 3 a.m. I also had to figure out the best way to sneak past the guards at night, if there were any. Right at 3 a.m. on the dot, I slowly opened my door and crept out into the hallway. There was an incredibly ominous feeling to the building this late at night. I slightly crouched down and made my way to the stairs. I heard some commotion near the bottom of the stairs, so I kept still. I peered down and saw a couple men in white, presumably taking laps to see if anyone was sneaking around. They seemed to avoid the actual hallways where all the clients' rooms were, probably because there were evil creatures scampering around at night, trying to trick us into letting them into our rooms. I made my way to the bottom of the stairs, and then dashed into one of the lounge areas. I hid behind a couch until I heard their footsteps grow quiet. Thank God no one heard me, because I thought I was being loud in the silence of the night. The meditation room was closed now. I gently walked down the hall and opened the door. I made it. I couldn't tell what time it was, but I figured that it only took me about 5 minutes to get there. I grabbed a meditation pillow and sat down. I was wondering what this guy would be like. No one was friendly at Harmony Hills, so I was a bit reluctant to think someone would actually try and help me. I leaned back against the wall, and for a moment, I lost myself in thought.
Hello, friend.
That startled me out of my trance. I didn't even see or hear anyone walk in. This guy just suddenly appeared there. He looked like an old man, maybe in his 60s or 70s. He had dark brown skin and long black hair that he had tied in a bun. He was also very skinny and was wearing a slight grin. His smile did not seem malevolent, though, like the men in white had. It was actually very endearing. It might have been the first person I've seen wearing an authentic smile in weeks.
My name's Anthony, and I really need your help. This place and these people torture us, and I need to escape. I don't know what to do, and I don't think I can survive here much longer. Please, can you help me?
I responded frantically, but all he did was patiently smile and wait for me to finish.
You must clear your minds before you can escape, my friend. Come, sit with me and breathe.
Look, I really don't have time for this. Do you know a way out of here or not? He seemed way too relaxed, though at this point I didn't even know if he was actually a human or some other being. But I wasn't having it. I needed some form of hope, or I was going to go insane.
You're in a mental prison, as well as a physical one, my friend. After you are free from your mental prison, you will be able to break out of the physical. Now sit with me and breathe. The answers will come to those who seek it.
I almost got up and left right then. But something about his genuine smile made me humor him. Okay, so after I sit with you and breathe, then you'll tell me.
After you sit with me, you will tell yourself.
He laughed. I sighed. Okay, I guess I'll just have to sit with this guy, I reasoned. I pulled up my pillow, so I was sitting next to him, and crossed my legs and closed my eyes. I started focusing on my breath, saying in on the inhale and out on the exhale. I actually had learned to meditate from a friend when I was trying to get clean from drugs years ago, so I somewhat knew what I was doing. After a couple of minutes of breathing, I completely lost myself. I was floating in the cosmos and felt the barriers of my body evaporate. I lost all concept of time. It was like this guy somehow drastically enhanced my meditation from just being next to him. At one point, I kept seeing images of people back in hunter-gatherer times. They were hunting by running animals down to exhaustion. I kept seeing different people running and hunting. And then, out of nowhere, I heard the light ding of a singing bowl. I opened my eyes, and the room was empty. I quickly stood up, alarmed. I had no idea how much time had passed. For all I knew, it was morning, and the men in white would have seen that I wasn't in bed. I snuck out of the meditation room and saw that it was still dark. I quietly made my way back to my room and laid down. Well, that was an experience, I thought. But it didn't really get me anywhere. I reflected on the man's words. He said I first had to escape my mental prison before I could escape the physical. So that would mean more meditation. I didn't really see how that could get me out of here. I opened up my list of rules. One of the last rules stated to stay in good physical shape. In my meditation, I kept seeing images of hunter-gatherers. Maybe exercise would help me. I started feeling my eyes grow heavy, and I fell asleep. From then on, I began exercising every day and seeing the meditation man during the nights. Slowly, my mind and body became stronger, and I was able to withstand the groups. Even the nightmares began to dissipate. I tried to get Alex and Travis to sneak to the meditation room with me, but they seemed too far gone at that point. They would tell me I just had to finish the program, and everything would get better. It was sad to see them that way. I knew that nothing good would come after finishing the program. The days flew by, and the groups weren't bothering me at all. I was able to zone out during them, and do what they told me to do without having any mental attachment to it, if that makes sense. And I was getting into great shape. Though, all that would come to an end soon. One day, two men in white came up to me, Alex, Travis, and whoever was left from our old detox group, and told us we were moving on to cocoon phase. And that is when I began my experience
with a whole new kind of hell.